Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the latest installment of Rockstar 101. His name is Brandon. He is the DJ.
His name is Shim. He's the rock star. Class is in session. And before we get really into things, I got to apologize. My voice is still recuperating. I'm not sure exactly what happened. I'm guessing allergies, but all week long, man, I was hosting the morning show that I normally produce because the host was gone, and it was a rough week because this is the best it sounded all week. So imagine it sounding worse than this, and that's how it's been all week long. So I apologize in advance.
You mean like, what do you mean? Like worse, like husky and like gravelly, or like that weird little pop that you get, that the weird little thing that you get where you sound like a bitch?
A lot of voice cracking, very puberty-esque, if you will.
Oh, okay, so not in a cool way. Okay, so then the apology is justified.
Nah, man, I wish it wasn't a cool way.
So anyway, what do we got today, man?
There's a lot of different topics that I want to cover. We've gotten a lot of feedback, especially people who were hitting you up on Facebook saying, hey, you know, I don't really go to Twitter. Is it cool if I hit you up on Facebook with a question? And yes, absolutely. If you follow Shim on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, by all means, you can fire off the questions there. It's just easier for us to promote, you know. Shim is on Twitter at Shim Moore. That's S-H-I-M-M-O-O-R-E. You can find me on Instagram. It's Brandon_goat_coats. That's C-O-A-T-E-S. So you can find us there. But if you find Shim on Facebook, by all means, ask some questions.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah. But yeah, before we get to any of the questions, the biggest thing that we need to be talking about, me and you right now on Rockstar 101, is Rage Against the Machine.
Yes! I am so excited. I cannot contain myself, dude. I swear to God, you guys, I read it, a few days ago. And I texted Brandon immediately because, short version, in case you've been living under a rock for the last week, Rage Against the Machine have, basically they've officially announced that they're doing some reunion shows. And one of the first shows is in El Paso. So, of course, the first thing I did was like, hey, Brandon, get me tickets. And, like, he can just magically snap his fingers and get them. However, he is in a better position to get tickets, hopefully, a little before they go on sale because he's in the business. He's in El Paso. He's at the station. So, but I was like, I'm telling you, dude, like, I don't think I've ever told you. Rage Against the Machine is, honestly, like, we talk about regrets. I don't have many regrets in my life. I really don't have many regrets that I can put my finger on. I have a handful. And one of them, legit, is that a while ago, basically, the Big Day Out we've talked about was a festival that was the biggest festival in Australia. I grew up going to this festival. Two stage, 60,000 people, biggest festival of the year. And I always said, one of these days, I'd go there every year when I was growing up to watch bands, and I'd say, one day I'm going to get on that stage. And then one year, the Puppies got on that stage. We opened the main stage, and it was a huge deal. We had backstage passes, all the rock star stuff. And Tool was headlining, and Muse was direct support. So it's an amazing lineup. And then the following year, Rage Against the Machine did their reunion, and they headlined the following year. And I could have gotten tickets, and my girl actually went to the show. And I would have had to fly back from LA, but I had the opportunity, and I didn't take it because I was like, it's, you know, I got to fly to the other side of the world. I haven't got tickets yet, but I can probably get them. Because we knew everyone by then, we'd played the festival, and I always regretted that I didn't go because I could have done it. And I asked my wife later on. I was like, you know, was it really that amazing? And she was like, no, they were okay. And then like 6 months later,
she's lying to you, buddy.
Yeah. And then like 6 months later, someone else asked, and she was like, no, it was the best live show I've ever seen. And I said, man, like, you told me that it wasn't that great. She was like, I know, I didn't want to hurt your feelings, but no, it was the best show I've ever seen. And I have this thing where I was like, I pray and hope they get back together. And as soon as I saw that a reunion show was happening, I will literally drop whatever I'm doing and fly to wherever they've got to be and get tickets and go, because I need to get that regret off the list.
And that's one of the things that we've talked about on Rockstar 101 is, what is a band that you have never seen live that is kind of the band, that elusive band that for some reason you've never been able to see? And for both you and I, it's Rage Against the Machine. Because one of the things that I was talking about all week long was the tour that they did with the Wu-Tang Clan back in 1997. And 17-year-old Brandon was ready to go. I'd been saving up my money from working at the Neon Pretzel in the Clackamas Town Center. And it was just a few days before the Portland, Oregon show.
The Neon Pretzel just sounds like some kinky sex position.
So just a couple of days before the Portland show, Wu-Tang backed out of the tour. Rage continued on. They kept the tour going, but I ended up not going just because it wasn't both bands. And then this week, TMZ got a hold of RZA, kind of the head of the Wu-Tang Clan, and they brought up that tour because this was after that Rage had put up their these few shows. And RZA said, I hope that they get through these shows and then they reach out to us and we finish that tour that we never did.
Wow.
Oh. And I got to tell you, I got super excited. So the dates that they had so far, when we're recording this right now, what we know so far is that it says March 26th, El Paso, March 28th, Las Cruces, New Mexico, March 30th, Phoenix, Arizona, April 10th and April 17th, Indio, California. That would, of course, be Coachella. And it's basically like having back-to-back shows down here because El Paso and then Las Cruces, they're 30 minutes away. So you can see them here in El Paso or maybe just go see them in Las Cruces. Either way, but we have no information on this. As we're recording this right now, we have had the people in our building getting a hold of the record labels, trying to figure some stuff out. We're not getting any information. No venues have been contacted at all by Rage Against the Machine. And coincidentally enough, we can't say who the band is. Shim knows it because I've told him who this band was, but there was a band that was potentially going to be coming to El Paso on that date, the March 26th date that Rage Against the Machine has posted. So now there's big confusion as to, did they know this other band was potentially going to be in El Paso? Is it going to be a double bill? Is it just complete confusion and a coincidence? There's so many mysteries around this thing, and it's pretty entertaining trying to decipher what's going on, because something else that not a lot of people know about, a bunch of posters were put up downtown in El Paso promoting the show.
Which show? Are you talking about the one with the band that we're not supposed to mention, or the Rage Against the Machine one?
The Rage Against the Machine one.
Oh, so they've actually been... So wait, are they putting up posters with the fist, the classic symbol with the fist on the star?
No, we don't. And we don't know who put the posters up.
So how do you know? Does it say... So it could just be fans.
Exactly. Because there's nobody has claimed to be the person to put them up. And there's a belief right now in El Paso that it was done by a local artist who happened to see their post and then they put him up. But there's a real mystery around this thing. And I'm not going to lie, it's pretty stinking cool.
I think it's dope. I think it's great that there is any element of mystery in any element of rock and roll right now, because most of the time you're just inundated with traffic and bands trying to be like, look at me, look at me, look at me. And then to have a band that has the ability, that has the legacy of Rage Against the Machine to just to drop a whisper and have people shitting their pants, like, over when are they coming, what's going on with it. And the fact that, like, it's not just me and fans of Rage, entire companies like your station and the building of your station are calling and trying to figure out what's going on because everyone wants to get involved, really goes to show you how influential, but also just what a place that band has in people's hearts and what a soundtrack it was to all of our lives. Like, everyone remembers where they were the first time they heard Rage Against the Machine.
Mm-hmm.
It just blows you away when you hear any song off that first album. And it's funny because the first time I ever heard of Rage Against the Machine, I was over at a friend's place, my neighbor. And they had a sort of a gazebo out back, which the dad had put together as like a hangout area. Mm-hmm. And it was just like a hangout area with stereo TV and a couple couches and all that sort of stuff. And they this was right when I was getting into grunge and music. Like, it was the first few months. And for me, I hadn't even gotten into Nirvana yet. I was listening to Silverchair and Green Day and getting to know the bands. And then one of the kids was bragging, like, yeah, I just got tickets to Rage Against the Machine. And when you don't know, it sounded like a festival. I thought it was a festival where there was a few bands playing. And so I was like, oh, who's playing? And he was like, Rage Against the Machine. And I'm like, yeah, what? And it took me a second. And that was the first time I heard it. He put on a song from Rage. Might have been 13. And I just was like, that I went and got the record the next day, and it was game over for me after that. But like, everyone remembers where they were, and everyone remembers wearing out that tape or CD for like 6 months afterwards, because it's just... And the fucking best part about that album is that it's an example of true music, in the fact that they recorded it at Sound City. Majority of the album was recorded in one night, live in the drum room, the whole band put together with a bunch of friends sitting around the room from their college that they all met at. And they just played the songs the way they play them, and then they did the rest of the album and the overdubs the next couple of days, and it was done. Like, they did it so quick, and it just caught that fire. When you hear about other bands, even modern, even current bands, that go into a studio, track everything separate, you run it in Pro Tools, you fix it, you add layers, you do this and that, and gradually run the risk of sucking the life out of it. And that album, you can't... That's why they still play songs off that record 25 years later. It's still relevant. It's still... People request it. Every day you guys must get a request for like a Killing in the Name Of. I'm like, how many fucking times can you listen to that song? And the answer is there's no limit to how many times you can hear it.
No, or any of those songs from, you know, Bulls on Parade or People of the Sun, all of that stuff. I still remember one of the first CDs I bought was Evil Empire back in 95, 96, whenever that one came out. That was one of the first CDs I ever bought. And I think that might be one I actually kept that I still own, even though I sold off all my, you know, giant CD collection just a couple of years ago. I think that's one that I held on to because it was one of the first ones that I ever purchased. So we'll try, like, we are going to try to keep people updated as far as being here in El Paso. The radio station that we are on, our flagship station for the morning show, it's KLAQ is the radio station. So if anybody listening to this wants to keep up to date with the Rage Against the Machine news as much as possible, just head on over to KLAQ.com and we'll keep people updated there, because truly there's not a lot of people that know a lot of information here, but we are constantly staying on top of the record labels or the management or just anybody who might have a clue. We're talking to the venues here in the city asking, you know, have you heard anything? Has anybody reached out to you about, you know, we have a few different venues here that are possibilities. But nothing so far, but definitely we're going to keep up to date. And yes, Shim, if I can get tickets, you better get your ass here. And you and I, we're going to go experience Rage Against the Machine.
I'm there. There's no question. I'm there, dude. I'll drop everything. So no, it's going to be awesome. I just hope that it comes to pass, because I remember a lot of people, at least online, Facebook is filled with crap, but, there was a lot of people that were saying, you know, oh, this is bullshit. And then there was a few things that I read where, no, this, there's actually confirmation from the band's team and the band's website saying, like, not saying it officially, but like pretty close to saying, we are going to do some shows, and that these were the show, and the shows that you mentioned earlier are the ones that have been announced. But then you get deeper into it and you're like, well, there's no tickets for sale, there's no venues booked. But at the same time, it's in March. Is it in March?
March 26th is the El Paso date. Yeah.
So you got 5 months. 5 months is plenty of time. They could drop a show in a week and it'd sell out. Like, they could literally drop a show anywhere in the world and it would sell out. So they got nothing but time, man. They're not sweating. So I'm just looking forward to finding out.
They could do it March 25th and it would still sell out by March 26th. There's no way that this thing would not be shoulder to shoulder. And wherever they perform at here in El Paso. But if anybody wants to come to El Paso and they check out Rage Against the Machine, Shim's going to come to town. You know, we'll all experience it together. It'll be the first time Shim and I are able to check out Rage Against the Machine live.
I think it'll be the podcast the day after that will be a dope podcast. Hell,
we should film a podcast at the show.
That'd be tight. That'd be awesome.
All right. So,
all right, cool.
Moving on to the next topic here. Something that we had teased before was that we are now just about under a couple of months away now from a new decade as we're going to go into 2020. And something that I had seen on Reddit was, what really sticks out to you from the last 9+ years? And this can be, it could be pop culture related, but I think even more specifically for you, Shim, what I want to ask you about this is, for you personally, you know, the last 10 years has been a big 10 years. And the same thing for myself. I mean, there was a moment here in the past 10 years, the past decade, that I didn't want to be doing radio anymore. I was doing everything that I could to get out of radio. And ultimately, I ended up back in. So for you, what really sticks out? What are a couple of stories that stick out to you in the past decade?
Well, I mean, if we're being holistic about it and we're talking like, if you're talking about like, you know, pop culture references and hey, this gig or that gig. But I'll tell you, man, I was thinking about it yesterday. The main thing that really defined that period of time for me was the Puppies breakup. It's probably one of the most definitive things that's happened in my life. But more importantly, the way that I handled it and going through that, because it's the same as losing, it's like losing a part of yourself. It's like losing a family member. And then having to deal with it in real time. And it's been a significant amount of time now since it happened. But I remember thinking about the difference between the person that I am now and the person I was while I was in the band, and then when the band first broke up, and who I am now. And I'm actually really sorry, pardon me. I'm actually really quite happy with the person that I have become because of going through that situation. And the main thing was learning to, which I don't think a lot of people learn how to do. I think there's a lot of people that learn how to be combative, and they're trained that way from youth and adolescence. They learn how to sort of be aggressive, but there's a difference between being aggressive and combative or competitive, and learning how to stand up for yourself. And the difference is that you're actually fighting for something specific. And what I was ultimately fighting for was the life and the version of myself that I am now, and I actually am here now. And that's one of the best things that, like, everything else kind of comes and goes, but in terms of the long game, you're talking about a whole decade, and the thing that's that was the most significant, created the most change for me was, you know, going through a breakup like that, and rather than having a thing where I'm like, it's too hard, I'll just take whatever money and run, and not fight for, you know, the fact that it was my identity, the fact that I had built the band, that I wrote all these songs and did all this stuff. And in retrospect, it cost a lot of money. And there are two ways to look at it. And I actually appreciate the way that I look at it now, because there's one way you can look at it is, oh, it's so negative. There was all this money that went to lawyers and that didn't go in my pocket. And what would I be doing with that money now? Money, money, money. And because people are always focused on money, especially when you're a guy and you're like, we're trained to work and to make money and to provide. And it's your barometer of how well you're doing in life. And I actually view it differently. And I look at it as, instead of losing money, I look at it as an investment in becoming the person that I am now. Because without that experience, I really would probably be a little bitch if I had just let the situation. No, I'm serious, man. Like, I was kind of a bitch, but while I was in the band, I used to take a lot of crap, and I used to let things happen that shouldn't have happened. And I compromised and backed down on points and arguments and all the sort of stuff. Like, it's no mystery that when bands break up, usually they don't like each other by the end. And I was kind of a bitch during the last part of the band. And then when I started to stand up for myself, it's painful. It's like growing pains. It's an evolution process. But now, having done it and saying, no, I have to fight for what I believe is right and what is mine and what I deserve, while also trying to not be vindictive and saying, well, I'm just going to take things from these other people because they're trying to take things from me, and trying to be holistic about it and say, no, I'm not trying to take something away from someone else, but I'm going to stand up for what I know I deserve. And that's a hard balance to strike, and it's hard to wake up every day and do that. But I find myself I found myself doing things differently just in the last week, and I reconnected with a couple of people who I hadn't seen for a while. And I was just doing things like, you know, and being more generous and less selfish towards them. And I was noticing they were like, just moments in their eyes that they were like, oh, that's, you didn't used to do that stuff. Like a few years ago, you weren't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, and so I grew up a lot. And that's really the thing that I took away the most from this decade. Everything else comes and goes. Money comes and goes. Music comes and goes. People come and go. Everything that's really important, that really matters, I've still managed to hold on to and cultivate and build upon. And so that would be it. And I think that when most people think about, you know, what the last 10 years means for them, usually they're going to pick, they might pick like, you know, a concert or a, you know, a girl or a guy that they met or whatever. But usually they're going to pick whatever their plight was, the most significant plight that they had to face and deal with over this time and how it changed them. And so that's what I, that's the, when you ask me, that's the first thing that comes to mind. And hope, and I'm sure there are a lot of other people that, that have done the same type of thing, especially if you're between your 30s and if you're between like your 20s and 40s when you're really becoming a grown-ass person, because in your 20s, you're just, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. No one does. And so I think a lot of people would probably have a version of that type of answer. The circumstances would just be different. But that's me. What about you?
Well, mine, again, it's kind of like what you just said. It's a different version of your story with a few different things. Because, I mean, the past decade for me has seen a lot of ups and a whole lot of downs. 2010, that year itself ended on a pretty big down note because the radio station that I worked for in Florida flipped to easy listening. It went from a rock station to easy listening. And a lot of the people that I worked with there, they got fired. I was fortunate enough to keep my job at that time, but they got let go. And then just a couple of years after that, I was finally let go. I was laid off from that job. And for the first time in a decade at that point, this was 2012, I had no clue what I was going to do. You know, I was locked into a house down there that I was trying to buy. And I, you know, I'd already made a ton of payments on it, but with the way that the loan was kind of set up, I was behind and the market had already crashed. It wasn't worth what it was when I paid for it. So I was very limited on what I could do. So I chose to go back to school. I made it just a couple of terms, realized that wasn't going to work out. So I moved back to Portland. I moved back home. I moved in with my mom. One of the things is, you know, to help her because she needed double knee surgery. She needed complete knee replacements. So I was able to go back and help her. And at that time, I wanted out. I was done with radio. I didn't want anything to do with it. I tried to get out, but I couldn't. So ultimately, I ended up back in working part-time in Portland, all the while still dealing with my parents going through a divorce. That really kicked off kind of in 2010, 2011. And then when I moved back was right after the divorce had become final in 2013. So it was really just, like you said, trying to find yourself and...
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way to put it, trying to find yourself.
Realizing at that point in life, hey, this past 10 years from your about age 20 to age 30 or early 20s to early 30s, as much as you thought you knew what the hell was going on, you did not.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
You know what I mean? Like it's just, as much as you can sit and you look back at 2005, 2006, 2007 when I was in my mid-20s, and I thought I knew a lot more than I did. I didn't know shit. And you got to be able to learn from that. And you got to be able to tell yourself that. Because if you can't tell yourself that, you're never going to grow from it. Because it was a really rocky time for me in my mid-30s dealing with all of these different things. And I was a pain in the ass to deal with to a lot of different people. And I apologize to those people profusely because I was an absolute pain in the ass to be around sometimes because I was just miserable. One of the other realizations that I've had in this past decade was, you know, I have to deal with some things that other people don't. I deal with severe anxiety and panic attacks. I battle depression on a daily basis. Like these are all things that in the past decade, I've finally been able to tell myself it's okay to admit it, not only to yourself, but to other people and to try to move on and deal with it. And that's something that even that's just in the past couple of years that I've really been able to do that. So these are all in this past decade, it has been one of the craziest roller coasters I've ever been on, but I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world because I can look back and say, this is where I was wrong. This is what I was doing wrong. here's some mistakes I made. Here's how I came back from those mistakes. Here's how I was able to bounce back, pick myself up from all of these different things. And ultimately, I landed a good job in 2015. That's when I ended up here in El Paso. I work for a phenomenal morning show that gets incredible ratings. You know, I've got job security. I love the boss that I work for because he's the one that had, you know, he hired me down in Florida. So there's a lot of really cool stuff looking back at these past 10 years. And it would be really easy to look just at the negative stuff. And I know that's how we kind of led our, both of ours with is something negative that happened. But as long as you're able to pull the positive out of that, I think that's all you can really do in life. And especially looking back at the past decade with some pretty major stuff going on. Especially for, you know, for somebody in their 30s.
It's a good question to ask, especially for anyone who's listening. And, you know, going back to that thing that you were talking about with anxiety and depression, I personally didn't know that about you. We've never really touched on that. At least we never really talked about it. But the fact that nowadays, you know, 10 years ago or when I was in high school or any time before recently, yeah, people, yeah, there was, you didn't talk about it, you didn't, and you definitely didn't explain to someone who wasn't like a direct family member or someone, hey, I've got depression, I need this medication, I've gone and seen a doctor, and now this, I'm doing this and it's working for me. Now, if you explain that to a person, if it's just someone that you work with or whatever, that's not necessarily a close personal friend, it's viewed as a sign of strength to say, I have this challenge and I'm facing it and I'm overcoming it and I'm doing what I got to do to deal with it. But it's because everyone's got their challenges, and especially for guys, you're you know, and it's the funniest thing. It's like, even now you talk to a lot of, every guy that I speak to, they're like, one of these commonalities that we battle with is that we're trying to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're trying to not be weak, to be perfect and strong, the same way that you hear about women trying to look perfect because they're inundated with images of the magazines and, you know, everything that comes with being a woman. And on the guy spectrum, people really don't want to hear a guy complain like, oh, I don't deal with these things very well, or I have panic attacks or whatever it is. And it's viewed as a sign of weakness. Whereas now, if you actually just go, okay, this is just a thing that I deal with and I'm doing the best I can to deal with it. And I think that that is one of the main things where, when you look at it as an overview of an entire decade, it gives you a bird's eye view. You're able to actually look back and go, okay, when it was 2014, it was really intense and I didn't know how to deal with it and what I was going to do. But then when it's been 6 years and you look back and you go, actually, it was tough, but that's just some stuff that happened and I got through it. And once you've been through enough stuff, you realize you just got to keep getting through it. You just got to keep going. The thing that creates real regret is when you just let yourself get stuck in a situation or a mindset and you just say, no, it's too hard. Like, for example, if you had been like, I'm getting out of radio, I'm going to get a day job. And then suddenly 10 years later, you're still working at the Neon Pretzel. You know, yep. Like, it's like, you know, and you're sitting there and you're like, and then your drive begins to atrophy and it gets harder to get out of that hole and harder to make a move. Whereas if you keep forward momentum going, even if it's just intense and hard and painful, you can look back and at least say, dude, I did my best. I made all these mistakes, or I was a prick. I had the same thing. I was a prick in my 20s. I was just so know-it-all. And I look back at the stuff that I did, and then I look at people who are in their early 20s and they're saying and acting the way that I did. And it's just classic stuff where you look back and you smack yourself in the face and go, I can't believe I used to be like that. But it takes 10 years of overcoming some personal stuff to just redefine what really is important to you. And as a quote from Fight Club, let what doesn't matter truly slide.
Mm-hmm.
And let it roll off your back and go, all right. And you become better at dealing with things. And that's why I think we're both basically on the same page, where I prefer the version of myself that I am now to any other version that I've ever been. Because I've managed to retain my creativity, my hopefulness. I don't get too negative. You know, and I've had panic attacks too. I had one last week, you know, and I just, you just get through it. Like, you feel it come up and you go, all right, we're doing this right now. I'll see you guys in an hour. I'm going to go and get through this. And then you have it and you come back out. And personally for me, I find it, I actually I'm sadistic, though. There's a part of me that actually looks forward to them because I feel like I've purged something afterwards, mm-hmm. and I can move forward a little bit lighter. But I have them due to, what do you call it? Like, when it's a stress overload.
Okay.
When everything mounts up just a little bit too much, it's usually just a stress overload. So, it's not a clinical condition or anything like that. It's just when everything's too much at one, and you hit a tipping point, and then I'm like, okay, cool, I'm going to purge this out. And then you let it out. And then you move on with it. And for my thing, I'm like, I look at it as the roller coaster. And you don't have the ups without the downs and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and for me, the thing that makes it, I think, the scariest for myself, the first time I ever had a panic attack was at Family Values, 2006, I think it was. Korn was headlining. And everybody, this is when I was working down in Florida, and everybody down there knew Brandon's the biggest Korn fan around. And my boss had given me the day off because it was during a weekday. And I think I'd worked something like 3 straight weeks in a row on weekends and everything. So about 21, 22 straight days I had worked. And he told me, look, you've been busting your butt. I'm giving you the day off. Go to the concert. So I did. And the thing that scares me the most about it is that mine come up for absolutely no reason, or at least a reason I haven't been able to find yet. And one of the worst parts of it is they'll happen when I'm feeling my best.
Oh, shit.
Like, they will pop up where I'm completely calm, I'm happy, I'm content, and I'll only be like that for about an hour or so, and then all of a sudden it starts to creep in. And then all of a sudden, right behind my eyes, it starts to feel like it's air, and all of a sudden my head starts to feel like it's floating off, and then my hands get sweaty, and then my feet get cold, and it's this panic attack, and then my chest starts to hurt. Hell, even describing all these symptoms right now, it's starting to spark one off.
Oh, shit.
But those are the symptoms, and that's how it hits. And one thing I did realize, something that's recently changed in just the past few years, I can't drink coffee. Anything with a lot of caffeine, boom, every time. It's going to hit every damn time. Ooh. So there's no way. Like, shit. If I want caffeine, I got to drink tea, something that has a lower amount of caffeine in it. So that's one of the things that's freaking out. You know, not saying this to, you know, for anything other than, hey, like, this is, you know, this is what I go through, and it fucking sucks, but you deal with it, you know? And the advantage is you can hopefully learn from it and move on. And whatever challenge is set in front of you, whatever you deal with, whatever you have to go through, if you choose to look at it a positive way, and if you choose to have that instance, that incident, that moment make you a better person, you can do that. But you have to choose that. It starts with you choosing it, and then you have to put forth the effort. Something I think it confuses a lot of people sometimes when they go through something like this is that if they see somebody who's able to do it and that person has made it look easy, they think it's easy in general. And that's probably one of the worst things, because it's not. You know, like, there's a lot of really rough things.
And that's why it's important to talk about it. Yeah, that's why it's important to talk about it. Like, it's a fine line. You want to talk about it to the point where you're being of service, but you don't want to just sit there and complain and go over and over your sad story. No. Because that doesn't help anyone. But you do want to talk about it and say, here's what I deal with and here's how I get through it, with an element of detail, and let people know, no, it's hard for everyone. It's just different. It's not a different level of difficulty. It's just a different type of circumstances. But at the end of the day, everyone's got it tough. And, you know, on the flip side, we're about to wrap this show up, but if there's anybody listening, in terms of, you know, we were talking about questions that you guys are asking on the socials, if there's anything that anyone's, you know, wants to comment on this particular thing, or anything that anyone's going through or that they can relate to, or any questions regarding this subject and how, you know, two guys go, you know, get through it, considering that, you know, we don't have any real, you know, like, we're not in Syria. You know, we're not in a war zone. We're just living life day to day and dealing with fairly common stresses.
Yeah.
But everybody is, and it doesn't change them. I find that when I start to be like, this sucks, I'll be like, all right, what if you were in a situation? What if you were off in Syria? What if you were in Somalia?
Yep.
And you got no food, no fridge, no roof over your head, and it pretty gives me a pretty swift kick in the butt to go, all right, this is, I'm actually pretty fortunate. Yeah. I'm pretty fortunate that this is the extent of what I have to deal with. These are champagne problems on the grand scheme of things. So if there's anyone out there that has questions on this or things that they'd like to relay that they think would be of service and value to anyone else listening, please send them on through, because this is a rock and roll show, but rock and roll is designed to be a connective device, and that's what this is all about.
And the other thing too is, if you don't want it publicly out there, like if you don't want to put it on Shim's Twitter page or Facebook or my Instagram page, you can always send a direct message. We'll do our best to get to them. It can be difficult sometimes trying to sift through everything, but by all means, you can always send a direct message. Shim is on Twitter. It is at Shim Moore, S-H-I-M-M-O-O-R-E. You can find me over on Instagram. It is Brandon_Goat_Coates. That's C-O-A-T-E-S. If there's anything, if you have any questions, or even if, you know, something that we've talked about, you know, it strikes a chord with you and you just want to make a comment to us that doesn't even make the podcast, by all means, you are more than welcome to do that as well. But on that note, we just blew through this episode pretty darn quick. At least it feels like this one went through stinking quick. Let's wrap this up. And we got a ton of things lined up for the next episode, because we've had a lot of feedback on the social medias of people asking questions. And I want to make sure we get to that stuff in the next episode.
Excellent. All right. Well, until next week, his name is Brandon. He is still the DJ.
His name is Shim. He is the rock star. Class dismissed.